How much should you pay for a property? So this is a very common question that we get asked, and there's kind of differing thoughts about this subject too. I've got investors that don't understand why we shouldn't go up to 80% of what they think they can resell it for, or some investors think that they should be buying things for 10 cents on the dollar. So there's kind of a wide range of what is sort of the standard, I guess, in this industry.
Well, everyone wants like a magic number or a formula that you can use to price every single property in every single condition. So
right.
you always make money, you never lose money, and you hit it right on the dot, and you take into account any like magical, scary things that are going to happen, but also maximize your profit.
Welcome to Turning Profit, a podcast for people that love real estate. Learn the business models and skills that professional real estate investors use to make money and build wealth. Visit turningprofit.com for a wealth of investor resources. And now, here are your hosts, Pete and Heather Reese.
Welcome to the Turning Profit Podcast. Heather, it's so great to be here once again.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all you
gotta
say.
It feels like we just had a talk, right?
Yeah, we just did.
But. Right. We're doing back-to-back episodes today. I know, I realized normally I would like change my clothes, but it is what it is, right?
Yeah.
So what are we talking about today?
Well, today we are talking about how much should you pay for a property? So this is a very common question that we get asked, like, and there's kind of differing thoughts about this subject too. I've got investors that, you know, don't understand why we shouldn't go up to 80% of what they think they can resell it for. Mm-hmm. Or some investors think that they should be buying things for 10 cents on the dollar. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of a wide range of what is sort of the standard, I guess, in this industry.
Well, everyone wants like a magic like number or a formula that you can use to price every single property in every single condition. So
right.
you always make money, you never lose money, and you hit it right on the dot, and you take into account any like magical, scary things that are going to happen, but also maximize your profit.
Yeah. So in today's episode, we're going to break this down, let you know what our formula is for that question, like how much should you pay for a property and how we deal with that. So
like how should you price the purchase?
Yeah.
Price the purchase.
Well, yeah. How should you figure out what to pay?
Right.
I mean, we've got it down to a very, maybe people will look at it as like overly simplistic way to look at this, but this has really served us well. And it's allowed us to get some great deals, but also minimize downside as well.
Right. And we learned pretty early on that we needed these set guidelines so that emotions don't come into play. And that if you had to jump in and price it, if Maddie's jumping in and pricing it, if anyone in the team is jumping in and pricing, at least everyone is understand and everyone who's valuating it, everyone who's touching the deal understands the formula.
Yep.
Because then there's no confusion. Personally, I like it the most because then you're not taking into, but this one's special because every property is special, right?
Yes.
Like, but I could do this. Mm-hmm. And if you have like your own rules, it helps you move quicker and it also mitigates risk.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. So, I think as an investor, it's really important to set up some sort of guidelines, and you may establish guidelines that are different than what we talk about and different than what we're doing. But I think it's really important to have some sort of guidelines set up for all those reasons that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're going to be building a real business, you want to have this criteria set so emotions don't come into play. So any other team member knows exactly what your criteria is, and you'll just ultimately be more successful if you have this well-defined. You're kind of without them, I put on here, you'll be rudderless and drift towards whatever feels right in the moment.
Rudderless.
Yeah, rudderless. Oh, it's like a boat without a rudder. Like you're just kind of drifting and you can't really steer to where you want to be going.
You know, I have days where I am more better. My performance is better. And sometimes it's not. I might just be like, Pete, I woke up and I'm feeling rudderless.
Yeah, you could say whatever you want. I'll understand what you mean if you say that.
I'm having a rudderless day and I just need help making sure I don't drift into whatever feels right in the moment.
We have clear guidelines and it's been one of our biggest keys to our success.
Yeah.
So, all right. So what should you pay for a land? Mm-hmm. So I'll start by talking about our guidelines. So our guidelines are that we pay 50% of what we think we can resell the property for. Mm-hmm. Now, that second part of it, you know, the 50%, I think most people understand like that's half of what, you know, you think you can resell the property for. Now, the anticipated resale price, what we think, that's the part that is a little variable.
Right.
Now, and it really depends on the market that you're buying in, and it really depends on the type of property that you're buying and everything like that. There's a lot of factors that come into play. We're doing our best guess and coming up with a number which we think that we could resell it for and get a contract in 60 days or less. Mm-hmm. So that's one of our big things is speed. So, And to do that, we might have to price it way less than actual retail and market value of the property. And it really depends on the area, the type of property, how desirable of a property this is and everything like that. So for instance, if we're buying a property where it's a busy market, things are buying and selling, you know, good properties sell right away or whatever, we may, our anticipated resale price may be, you know, very close or 100% of like retail value. Mm-hmm. So, because we know we can get retail value, we put it on the market, we'll find a buyer pretty quickly. But if we're in an area where it's slow, where there are maybe a lot of competing properties on the market, and in those situations, we know we have to price the property really aggressively in order to get a buyer pretty quickly, which is within 60 days or less. Mm-hmm. That second part of the equation is like pretty variable, depending on what the conditions are, what the property's like. If it's a less desirable property, we're probably going to have to be a little bit more aggressive on the resale price. So just as a rough example, you know, if retail values of a property is 100,000 and this market is pretty hot, things are going well or whatever, we would go up to like $50,000 on the purchase price, 50% of what we think we could resell it for, which would be 100,000. Now that same, you know, numbers, like if a retail value of this property in a very slow area is 100,000, we're not going to anticipate that we're going to get 100,000 for it. We're going to think like, okay, that in that area, it may be say 70,000 is where we'd have to be in order
exactly
to sell it quickly.
Was
that you were thinking? Yeah. So in that case, if our anticipated resale value is 70,000, we would have to buy the property at 35,000 in order to make that work.
Right. People get hung up on, they think, okay, 50% of like best average retail value.
Yeah.
And that has absolutely nothing to do with it. The retail value has nothing to do with it. It's
right.
It's our price that we're looking to get. We get 50% of that.
Right.
And it's not, I also want to point out, we're not like doing this because we're like, we want to make 50% profit.
Mm-hmm.
We don't anticipate making 50% profit. I mean, but also,
we try to.
Right. But I mean, we try to, but we're not going to take home 50% profit.
No.
So it's not like we're saying we want to actually double our money in the sense that we put out 50,000 and we expect to get back 100,000. That's not the case at all.
Right.
So that 50% margin is what accounts for closing costs, for commissions, for any other sorts of things we have to do, the photography, if there's engineering, if there needs to be cleared, if it needs to be whatever.
Lots of expenses for our team.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Software, mailing costs, uh-huh. Lead generation costs. So like there's a lot of stuff that gets chipped away from that profit. So you really have to have a good margin there in order to make it all work. And that's if everything goes exactly like it's planned.
Yeah. And that's the other thing is that some of them, they're great, you know? And then you have some that like get the margin is very small after all is said and done. So it's also a balancing act. It's like this property might be, you know, do fantastic. That one won't, but we balance them out and we're doing fine.
Yep. So doing it in this way gives downside protection. So these properties, it's buying land like this is very different from buying a single family home, because single family homes in most areas, the resale value is pretty well defined, especially if you're looking at suburban areas or something where there's many houses, very similar. There's great comps, the house down the street, the same floor plan sold, and you know exactly what that sold for, what condition it was in. You know, you could get a really, really close on what you think, what that property is worth. Land is very different, and especially in the rural areas, because there could be three 10-acre properties on the same street that are all wildly different values. One of them is all meadow, one of them is all forested, one of them has lots of wetlands and flood zone on it. There's infinite, you know, possibilities and things when it comes to these rural properties. So we do our best guess, kind of, to figure out what we think these properties are going to be worth. But it's really important to have that margin to allow for problems on the downside. Because if you put the property on the market and it's just not, you know, getting the kind of interest that you thought it was going to be, you're remedy to that is reducing the price until it sells, till the market tells you, okay, this is what it's worth. Want to learn the secret to building a thriving land flipping business? Head on over to landconquest.com and join over 2,000 passionate land flippers leveraging the power of community to scale quickly. Sign up for free at landconquest.com. All right, let's get back to the show.
You can always go down, but you can't go up.
That's right. Yeah. It's one of those things that it's just important to have that downside room, you know, because the last thing you want to do is lose money.
Right.
If you're losers or properties where you're breaking even, then you're doing okay. You'll make good money on certain properties, but you just don't want to lose money on the stinkers.
Right. Yeah. And that has been our goal from the beginning, is don't lose money.
Yeah. Don't lose money. Yeah.
Set the bar really high on that. But no, I mean, that's just kind of one of the things, like, as long as we haven't lost money, we're still winning, and there's going to be the ones that are going to do better.
And that kind of transitions into this next thing. I get a lot of these, you know, through our Partner with Pete program, I get a lot of investors that will submit properties. This is a common scenario that they've got a property under contract for $700,000 and the estimated resale value is $1 million. Mm-hmm. Or they think it's worth $1 million. And they're like, well, we're going to make at least $200,000 overall. We could split it, you know, $100,000 each. This is like a no-brainer. But the problem is that's a lot of money to put out, first of all. And it doesn't account for any sort of downside risk, especially when you have some larger value properties of that, like that, the resale value is more up in the air even. So it just doesn't give you enough downside, you know, and you might be really confident that you could sell it for $1 million. And I know that's it's human nature to do that. Like, OK, yeah, I could definitely get this for that property and all those types of things. I think that way myself sometimes. But I also am wise enough to know at this point that whatever I think we could sell it for, we still have to be very diligent about using this formula, because you never really know what's going to happen. So yes, $100,000 in that scenario sounds great, but reality a lot of times is not. So what happens if you can't sell it for $1 million?
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Keep reducing, keeps reducing. And then you might have to reduce it to $700,000. And then you have commissions and closing costs and everything. And then you're going to be losing money and spending all this time. And you put out all that money just to lose money. It's not a good scenario.
So. No. And that's the thing with those big ones. You see the big chunk of money, you think, oh, well, there's lots of money. No, because the issue is that you have the, you know, percentage that you have to drop it is also big chunks.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. I was just thinking the exact same thing.
I would suggest being cautious in those scenarios as well. So just because there's, you know, maybe a bigger profit to be had there, I wouldn't really deviate from that formula. You know, we went over this a little bit. Anticipated resale price depends on a number of factors. You know, how busy is the market? You know, hot markets, you can anticipate a retail price a lot of times, but cold markets, you'll have to, you know, discount the property heavily in a lot of cases for a quick sale. Could be 70%. Maybe it's 50%, or maybe it's just such a slow market, nothing sells. You have to put it on the market for 50% of what a retail sale would be. So it just really depends. So the other thing is the quality of the property. That's another thing that comes into play. Like properties that are quality properties, nice properties that are sort of premium ones, they tend to sell the fastest. Properties that have issues, you know, they have might have slope, they may have, you know, other issues with the property, those aren't going to sell as fast. So there's always buyers looking for premium properties in most areas. And those will sell the fastest. And those are the ones that you're going to have a better chance of getting that full retail value for. So that's another big thing. I've got a question down here. Will we change our criteria for more expensive properties? Oh, we just went through that. No, we do not change our criteria for more expensive properties. In fact, I almost feel like we have to be more conservative on those bigger properties.
100%. Because you have more, you know, with the smaller properties, you're spreading out the risk.
Yeah.
So you mitigate your issues just by spreading it out. It's like that whole thing. Like if you're investing, you've invested in 10 different things and 9 of them flop, but one of them's amazing, you're doing fine.
Yeah.
But if you put everything into one of those and 9 out of 10 are going to flop.
Yeah, exactly. Like one $500,000 purchase is the same as 10 $50,000 purchases.
Yeah, right.
So, and so you lose on one of those, it's not as big of a deal.
And which I do have to say, like, we've hit some that have been really good in that, in the higher price, and also some that haven't been.
Right, exactly.
You know, so it is true. It kind of levels out. It's more, what's the word? You've got that bigger spread.
Easter famine.
Yeah, in the big ones than the middle ground ones.
Yeah.
Because you're also dealing with people, you know, who's going to be buying that? It's not going to be the neighbor. It's not going to be someone who wants to build a house. No, it's normally, I mean, I guess it could be, but it's mostly like developers and people who are following very strict, their own strict guidelines.
Yeah.
And they want the good deal too.
Yeah.
Or it takes longer, or you've got to be a bigger plan. So I think you need to be more careful.
One of them recently, I thought that we were, and when I say recently, it took us, we owned this property for almost a year. I thought we were going to be able to sell it for $900,000. I think we bought it for $450,000 or something like that. And then ultimately, we ended up selling it for low $600,000, something like that. So after holding costs, we actually took out a loan to buy this property and everything. So after holding costs and other expenses and everything we had on it, we actually didn't make any money at all on this property. And, you know, I thought for sure we were going to sell it for $900,000. That's what the comps indicated and everything. But the market told me different. So
was there a reason afterwards that you realized, or was it just kind
of? There's, you know, like each property is different. You know, I think on this property, it didn't have like a huge amount of road frontage. So I think that was maybe the limiting factor on it. That's really hard to really say.
Yeah, you just don't know. It does seem that there's a bigger discrepancy with those. What about, do you use the same criteria for cheap properties? Like, so if you bought it for $1,000, you sell it for $2,000?
Yeah. So on those, I at a minimum, I would look at that same criteria. But, you know, it at a certain amount, I also have this caveat in our kind of program that I want to make at least $20,000 profit on the deal. So I don't like, say, for instance, so if we bought a property for $7,000 and I anticipated the resale is $14,000, I wouldn't do that deal because I wouldn't make $20,000 in profit. So it has to meet those two things.
Right.
So at least $20,000 projected profit and buying for 50% of anticipated resale price.
Okay. I mean, so. And that was another thing that we realized, like, and something we've learned in real estate over all these years is it's the smaller the transaction, the bigger the
pain. Oh, yeah. Bigger the pain. Yeah, definitely. It's really, really the case. And so I definitely, you know, maybe you want to get your feet wet as an investor and buy some cheap ones and resell them just to kind of prove the concept. But I wouldn't waste a lot of time dealing with those type of properties.
Right. A lot of people go quicker. And you have to build a bigger team because to make the profits that you probably will want to make eventually, you're going to have to sell how many of the 1,000, 2,000, 5,000? The 1 and 2,000s are...
Well, so I think some people get intoxicated by this because they may see opportunities where they're buying for 1,000 and then they're selling for 5,000. And they're thinking to themselves, well, this is amazing, like five times my money on this deal. Or they'll buy for 1,000 and then they'll sell to someone on payments for $5,000. So, you know, it's just a lot of effort, you know?
Right.
It's a lot of effort.
Which means, and I guess that what I was going to get to was that, okay, well, you can't do this as a one-man team now.
Right.
One-woman team, one-person team. No, you start doing a bunch of that kind of stuff. That is a lot of legwork. You're going to need to bring on people.
Yep.
Which means you're going to have higher expenses, which you're going to cut into the profit. You're going to have to train them, more headache, more heartache, all this kind of stuff.
Yep.
It's just something that you have to really consider. What I had a couple questions for you.
Sure. Fire away, Heather.
If you are okay. Let's see if I can remember. I should have written them down. Why did you come up with 50%?
Oh, I heard of someone else doing it.
Did
you? It made sense. Yeah.
Okay. So someone else kind of mentioned that and you were like,
yeah, they're like, oh, we're trying to, well, they're just, they were doing like, they're trying to buy half price. Like they're trying to buy half of what retail value was or whatever. But I guess tweaked it a little bit. Like it's like 50% of anticipated resale price. So.
And then at what point in your journey, I hate that term. It sounds like spiritual. Did you lock in that?
Pretty quickly. Within the first couple months, I was like, okay, we're really sticking to this. Like, this is our set criteria. So, and then once we set that criteria, then very rarely would I ever deviate from that.
When are times that you have?
I think I've pushed it in some cases where I have experience in a certain area. So in certain areas where I've sold properties before, where I've got a good agent, good team on the ground, and I'm very certain of the resale price. In those types of situations, I'll push it a little bit sometimes.
Okay, because you're more comfortable.
Yeah, I'm more comfortable. I know that the property's going to sell. You know, it's just a matter of like, so I'm comfortable on those situations going with a little bit less margin because I've got the certainty of the resale price pretty locked down. Boost your land flipping earnings with our new Land Conquest business system. It's designed for efficiency and effectiveness. This cutting-edge software tool is your key to success in the land flipping industry. Streamline and automate your operations to scale your business to new heights. With our system, you get a customizable website with 6 professional templates to choose from, up to 5 dedicated phone numbers, each with their own chosen area codes for creating a trustworthy local presence. And as a bonus, you'll get a $25 credit for SMS and email sends. You'll also get access to our tech team to build any automations or customizations that you want. And not to mention, we've got a great dedicated community to the Land Conquest business system to help us all thrive together. And with every step of the way, you get our 24/7 live chat support. But that's not all. You'll also gain access to our exclusive community to connect and grow with fellow land flippers. Seize the opportunity to transform your business. Visit software.landconquest.com to check out the Land Conquest business system and unlock the next stage of your land flipping success.
Okay, and when we started, what was the criteria? Did you have criteria?
Not really. I guess I was just trying to buy for a price that was what I thought would be a no-lose situation.
Mm-hmm. And then do you have certain criteria if you were to look at the, like if you look at the comps and you see retail value, how do you then set what your anticipated resale price is going to be? You went into it a little bit, but is there a set? Well, I try
to determine how hot that market is. So mm-hmm. I always look at the sold to for sale ratio. So that's an easy thing where I look it up on Zillow and I see, okay, over the past 12 months, how many properties within this acreage range have sold within the past 12 months? Say it's 10, you know, 10 properties in that range sold over the past year. And then I look and see how many active listings are on the market in that range. And if it's, say it comes up with 10, then I consider that a pretty balanced market. So the amount of sales over the past year equal to the amount of listings in that current range. You know, that's what I consider to be a balanced market. Now, if there have been 50 sales in that range and there's only 10 lists over the past year and there's only 10 listings, that's a very hot market. And on the flip side, if you look and there's 50 listings in that range and only 10 sales over the past year, then that's a very cold market. So I determine how cold that market is. And then I look at the property and determine like how desirable I think it is, like the features of it and everything like that. And if I feel like it's a pretty premium type property, then, you know, I'll give some more, I'll let it be closer to the actual retail price.
And then even with the set criteria, do you still find yourself having to redirect yourself?
No, I don't. You know, I've got a great team member now that does all the valuations for it. So he knows the criteria and everything like that. So he doesn't allow motions to come into play or anything like that. And we're pretty much on the same page with these. So I try to look at it very analytically and not emotionally.
Okay, so you're not even tempted anymore. It's like, oh, it just doesn't hit. And
yeah, we've
just
got so many deals. We've got so many properties that we're buying and selling and everything like that, that I don't feel like a scarcity thing, like I need to make a deal work or anything like that. Like that's not even in my mind anymore. Like
if it
doesn't make sense, then I'm completely fine not doing it.
And then walk me through your $20,000 minimum.
Projected profit.
Like how did that come about and why?
Yeah, well, I just after the first year was like, okay, on average, we made $20,000 in gross profit per deal. Mm-hmm. So to me, it didn't, I realized like the ones that we were making the more profit on were actually the easier deals, and the ones that we made hardly anything on were the bigger pain. So I was like, well, let's skew towards the bigger properties. So I figured that criteria, you know, at least $20,000 projected profit was what it would make sense for us to actually do the deal. We've got a little calculator where we try to estimate what the closing costs are on the purchase, any value add types of things that we're going to do, and on the resale side, what the closing costs are on the resale side, the commissions and everything like that. So that'll tell us pretty quickly if we've got that minimum of $20,000 in projected profit.
Do you ever go down on that?
No, at this point, no.
And then you talk about a minimum, but do you have a maximum?
A maximum amount of profit? No.
property size.
Property purchase price? I mean, no, not really. I mean, I guess if, you know, I get certain properties that come our way where they're, you know, millions of dollars or something like that. And I probably wouldn't do something like that unless it's like a major, major, very obvious deal in some way. Mm-hmm. You know, I wouldn't use our own cash to purchase something like that, but I would probably bring in a lender to finance a lot of that deal. But if it's a complete slam dunk, you know, where I'm 100% sure of it, I would consider something like that. But
yeah, and then I want to break apart too. So it's a minimum of $20,000 projected profit. So that could be a $1,000 purchase price.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it could be a
$30,000 resale price. Yeah.
Right. So that would be fine.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. It's not really the price of the property. It's just the profit.
Right.
And I think a lot of people, because I skew towards, I hate the really cheap ones.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that the profit's not there. So it's, so a lot of times I think when we say this, people think, oh, they don't buy the really cheap ones. That's not necessarily the case. Mm-hmm.
Like it's hard to make the numbers work. You know, it's hard to get those. It would be hard to get a deal where you buy it for $1,000 and sell it for $30,000. I guess they come along every once in a while. I've never done one like that.
Well, we would have offered more to begin with. That's
I have about brought properties for like $7,000 and sold them for like $40,000 or $50,000 mm-hmm. in that range. So that's more of the ones that might come up. So.
Right. And that would be something we would a lot of times have to do something to some sort of engineering.
Exactly. Do some value add. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not like just, oh, do this and get that. Okay. Yeah. Any other questions that I should have asked you?
I don't know. Those are good questions, Heather. I feel like you're kind of putting me on the spot here.
I like it. That's good.
Interrogation.
I know I had to actually, when you were giving the answers, I had to like really dig deep to like go back through and try to trigger my brain to remember the questions I had through the whole thing. So you know, if you saw me, I was like,
you know, those old TV shows where they would have the police interrogating a suspect and mm-hmm. they'd have that one light bulb. Oh, God, you, it felt like that.
Yeah. You wouldn't do good in that situation. No, you'd be like,
yeah, you'd tell I'm uneasy. Yes.
Yeah. I'd be like, whatever. Okay. Well, I'm going to segment us to the next section, which is questions from the community. And where can they find this? Where do these happen?
Our community, Land Conquest, can be found on the school platform. But the easiest way to find that would be to go to landconquest.com. You'll see a button on there for our free community. You also see a button on there for our membership program. Now, our membership program is very reasonable, by the way, is kind of a bundle of three separate things. First of all, it's our advanced community. Mm-hmm. And in our advanced community, there are other investors that are serious about this business and mm-hmm. serious about doing land investing. And we've got a weekly one-hour Q&A video call that I do with the community. And you know, investors bring deals that they're looking at. They want me to evaluate. I'll share my screen and tell you what I think it's worth.
The good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'll tell you exactly what I think mm-hmm. about it. And if it's not a great deal, I would tell you it's not a great deal. Mm-hmm. And so we do those in the community. We've got lots of things going on there. And then we've also got our Land Conquest course. And that's part of the membership program as well. And it's over 10 hours of video content. Tens of thousands of dollars that we put mm-hmm. into producing that. So it's very professionally done. And it's our whole exact business plan, A to Z, everything that we do to run our business. It includes scripts. It includes the actual letter we send out, templates for everything, spreadsheets, everything you need to run your business. And then the third portion of that is our Land Conquest software. And that includes a lot of things as well. Land Investor website as part of that. You get phone numbers for your business, up to five phone numbers for your business. There's a CRM portion of it, some AI chatbots built into that, dealing with leads as they come in, long-term drip sequences. You also have all the processes within the land investing business that are kind of managed through that platform. So that's all included for a very small monthly fee, very reasonable monthly fee.
Right. I want to touch on one other thing. Something that's one of my favorites is your 50 first deals. If you're new to this.
Oh, yes.
I really, really like that because I think it shows like from like we talk about this, especially today, we talked about like the progression from when you started to where we are now. And I think that a really good visual of that and you go into deeper explanation is the first 50 first deals. And tell me what that is and where to find it.
Yeah. So you find that on the landconquest.com as well. And that will, you know, that is the breakdown of the first 50 deals that we did. I talked through all the deals, like what we bought it for, what we sold it for, how much money we made on the deal, like what I learned on that and everything like that. So I think it's very informative. If you're interested in getting into this business, and I think it's a kind of a must watch type thing. So you can find that on landconquest.com. You just have to give us your name and your email so you get on our email list. I promise we won't spam you.
Okay, so questions from the community. You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, Brett asks, quick claim deed, ? I had a response come in from a recent mailer stating the subject property was purchased through a tax sale. As a result, the seller, an attorney, is wanting to use a quick claim deed versus warranty deed. From what I can find online, a quick claim deed is essentially a transfer of ownership without any protection against title issues. It seems unlikely that this is anything I want to be a part of, but I didn't want to write it off without seeking some input from anyone who's experienced with this. Is there any workaround to obtain the typical protection you would get through a warranty deed, or should I just move on? Thanks in advance.
Okay, so yeah, I can see what they're trying to do as a seller. They're trying to just basically wash their hands of it mm-hmm. and just say, hey, you know, you don't get any protection. We're just going to do this quick claim deed. And that's all you get. So when you have these tax auction properties in a lot of states, you're going to have problems or issues getting title insurance, at least for a few years. There's like a waiting period or something mm-hmm. like that. So that's why they want to do this. They just wanted to, and they don't want to like insure the title or anything like that. There is a service, it's called Tax Title Services. They operate in some states. I'm not sure what the specific list is, but you can look on their website. But they will basically cure these that title issues for these tax sale properties and issue title insurance. I think it's a few thousand dollars or something like that. So the property value's got to be worth it to do. But when you have a situation like that, you maybe want to look at that, look at what they offer and see if it's applicable to that state and maybe propose something like that.
Right. Because when you get it, when it goes to tax sale, it's not a traditional sale anyways. And then, like you said, there can be a waiting period. The seller could, or the property owner could come back and say, I didn't get processed right.
Yeah. There's some reinstatement things like that. Yeah. There's in some states they can actually, you know, come up with the money at some point and then you're out of the deal. And like, I don't know, all kinds of things that can happen. It's very state by state specific. So,
and maybe the attorney truly can't provide that. No one would do it, but maybe there should be more upfront explanation to explain why the different ones are happening. So would you buy it?
No, not in that situation. I would buy it if I could go through that tax title services and get, you know, title insurance, I would do that in that situation, yes.
Well, we don't buy anything without title insurance, is that correct?
So yeah, exactly. When
it's a mute point. It has nothing to do with anything, you know, funky business going on or not, which might not even be the case. It might just be what kind of deed can be done because of that. So that's another one of our things. We use closing companies. What that looks like is specific to the area, and we always get title insurance.
Yep, correct.
Are you looking for funding for your land flipping deal? Then head on over to partnerwithpete.com. It's an innovative new funding program where we split the profits with you 50-50, but we take it one step further and we handle every other step of the process in the land flipping business. Yes, that means we handle all the due diligence. If the property needs any value add, like clearing brush, perk test, survey, we'll get that paid for up front. Then when the property resells, we split the profits 50-50. There is absolutely no downside for you as an investor. If we lose money, we don't pass that on to you. But when we make money, when we make profit, we split the proceeds 50-50. So as a recap, we handle every part of the process. We split the profits with you 50-50. There's no downside for you as the investor, only upside. So go to partnerwithpete.com, submit your deal there, and we'll get it checked out within 24 hours.
Title insurance normally only covers the price you pay. It doesn't cover your
what it's worth.
Exactly. Yeah. So just another thing in case you're wondering, like, whatever. No. And they don't normally, they try to cure it. Okay. Jason says, newbie question on the strategy. Hi, all. I'm considering paying for training a few years ago from another land group online. I was turned off from it because the model is to use a different website for sellers than buyers in order to somehow try to hide their resale listing from the person they bought the land from. It seems like they were trying to hide the wholesale business model altogether from the seller. Is it possible to do this business without trying to hide things with different websites? I do understand you don't necessarily want to spill the beans on your intentions once you buy it, as it is not the seller's business. But because of the low offers, I think you have to explain your business model to some degree and not hide through a bunch of websites, correct?
Okay, so a couple things there. I think in this scenario, maybe the other business model that they're talking about is one where you get a property under contract and then you market it without closing on the property. Mm-hmm. So first of all, we close on all of our properties, so we buy the properties and close on them, and then we market them after that. So we only have, in our business, we only have the buy side website. So positioning towards the sellers. So we're presenting ourselves to the sellers and we don't market the properties ourselves. We have real estate agents that we hire to do all the marketing and everything like that. So we don't then put the properties on a website where we're marketing them in that way. So a couple other things to note, though, in discussions with the sellers and everything like that, the way we position ourselves is a convenience buyer. Mm-hmm. So we pay cash, we close quickly, we close without any drama. We're not looking for them to do anything to these properties or anything like that. It's kind of like a situation where you've got a used car, you want to buy a new car. So you've got an option of trading it in at the dealer. Mm-hmm. And if you trade it in the dealer, you know you're not going to get top dollar. But it's going to be a very convenient thing. They're going to handle all the paperwork. It's going to be just easy. They're not going to ask you to detail the car, fix anything, put new tires on, none of that. They will buy it from you. You're not going to get top dollar, but it's convenient.
And they know that they're not going to get scammed. It's a legit thing. You're going to go through a legit
Yep.
Dealership. It's not going to be like, you know, you're not meeting some random guy in a back alley.
Yeah. And that's the other thing. You try to sell the property, try to sell the car yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, you would get more for the car. Mm-hmm. You might have a hard time selling it if the tires are bald. If you didn't detail the car, if it's got a broken windshield, mm-hmm. anything like that. So you probably have to do some things in order to retail it and get that value out of it. So we're the convenience buyer when it comes to real estate. We're not going to give them top dollar. We're an investment company mm-hmm. where our goal is to make money on these properties in one way or another. We have all kinds of exit plans. A lot of times we'll just, you know, resell the property after doing some of these minor things mm-hmm. to the property. But other investors will buy these properties and sell them on owner financing or other things like that. So I think if you're upfront and you tell the sellers that you're dealing with that you're the convenience buyer and you're an investment company. So mm-hmm. your goal is to ultimately make money with this property in some way.
Yeah.
So most people don't care.
That's what I thought it was going to be a much bigger deal. People don't. They just mm-hmm. want the money. They want to sell that property. They don't care what you do with it. It doesn't have value to them.
Right.
Beyond, you know, what they get. The other side of that too is I think it actually would be confusing to have both on one website. So I think that you should probably split it up regardless if that's what you're going to do, not to like trick people. Right. Front, mainly just because if I'm coming to buy, I don't want to see your sell. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. So if you are going to do the marketing side of things, I would recommend doing two separate websites. Not, mm-hmm. not as a thing to hide anything, but they just have two completely different focuses. You know, you've got your website, which is positioned towards the sellers. Mm-hmm. You're telling them why you're a great buyer mm-hmm. and why they should be working with you. And then you've got another website where you're basically, it's just almost like an e-commerce website where you're selling your pieces of land that you have,
right.
your inventory.
Right. And when you're doing either of those things, the whole thing with that e-marketing is that you want to be very specific and you're taking them on an adventure.
Yeah.
And it's very specific. Okay, you land here, you see what we are, and then you do it here. You don't want them to be jumping around looking at all sorts of random stuff. So, right. Okay. Dennis says valuations. A quick question here. If you have a parcel, for example, say like 20 acres and half of it is wetlands, say it's on the rear of the property, when running comparable sales on Zillow, would you consider using a 10-acre parcel with no wetlands as a comp?
You could do that. You know, typically the way we look at those types of things is, say, for instance, you've got that 20-acre property, 10 mm-hmm. acres of it is wetlands. Mm-hmm. So we'd figure out like a price per acre on the more premium part of the property, mm-hmm. Do some math there. And then we'd also assign a price per acre on the wetlands portion of it as well. Say, for instance, the premium stuff is worth $10,000 an acre, but the wetlands portion is only worth $1,000 an acre, you know, something like that. So we try to come up with the value for each of those and do a little bit of math and figure out the value that way.
Last question of the day here is from Brian, CRM. What CRM are you guys using? I really need to make a decision this week with our new hire.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we use
our
Land Conquest software, which is part of our membership program. And this is everything we use to run our land investing business. It's completely customized towards the land investing business, all custom fields and everything like that. It's got an AI bot built into it as well. If you are doing like pay-per-click leads or something like that. So the AI bot will then respond to leads and qualify them for you on your behalf. There's so many different things involved. You actually get a website as part of that. You get five phone numbers as part of that. That's what I suggest.
And we know that it works. And we built it for this specific business and to do everything you needed to do as simply and as time effectively as possible.
Yeah. And it's not just a CRM. Mm-hmm. All of our other business processes are built into the software as well. So we've got the value add processes. We've got their marketing ad processes, our due diligence processes, our transaction on the buy side and the resale side, all built into the software itself. So,
awesome.
So to find that, just simply mm-hmm. go to landconquest.com and you'll see a button for that there.
Awesome. Where can everyone find you on the interwebs?
Yeah, best place to find me is in our Land Conquest community, which is on school. You mm-hmm. go to landconquest.com. Also, you can find me on Instagram, @PartnerWithPete. And you can also find me on TikTok. I'm on there as well. I'm not doing any dancing.
Oh, you stole my line.
Yes, I knew you were going to ask that.
Well, when you say TikTok, I have this vision of you like, I don't know.
I feel a little funny saying that, but it's just basically little clip videos, a lot mm-hmm. from our podcast and other things like that. Also, if you are looking for funding for an investment property that you have under contract, go check out partnerwithpete.com. We have a very innovative funding program, and we can partner with you on your next deal.
Yeah. Well, we'll see you in the group. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
We'll see you then.
Bye.
All right. Bye.
Ready to start turning profit yourself? Head to turningprofit.com to step up your real estate investing game. See you on the next episode.